What if I told you that keeping your money in, a perfectly safe standard savings account is actually a mathematical guarantee that you will lose wealth over the next 10 years?
I mean, it is the ultimate paradox of personal finance, right?
Right.
And it's something so many people are waking up to right now.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are taking on a mission to decode how you can make your money work exactly as hard as you do instead of just letting it slowly evaporate in a bank vault.
To unpack it, we're actually analyzing a really comprehensive stack of sources today. We are looking at excerpts from The Financial Text, Strategic Wealth Building Through Monthly High Return Investment Plans, alongside some really highly practical behavioral blueprints from the Gamma blog.
Right. And the vantage point we have right now in 2026 is, well, it's crucial for this conversation. When we look back at last year, 2025 was a massive structural turning point.
Well, absolutely.
Interest rates finally started stabilizing after years of, aggressive hikes and market chaos. And I think people looked at their balances and realized that just storing their income was no longer the same thing as multiplying it.
Yeah, and as I'm organizing my notes on this,
Sure.
and if you could see the backdrop here, it's this dynamic, shifting cityscape with stock tickers rolling by, mapping out the markets we're about to discuss. I really want to validate that feeling of financial stagnation for you.
It's a real feeling.
It is. If you pay your bills, avoid bad debt, save a portion of your paycheck, and still feel like you're just treading water, you are experiencing a mechanical failure, not a moral one.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we start naming specific funds or platforms, we really have to look at the underlying engines. Like, why does structured monthly investing mathematically outperform just hoarding cash in a standard account?
Well, the source text points to two primary engines of wealth. The
Yeah.
first is compound interest, which is, the classic snowball effect. Your earnings are reinvested to generate their own earnings, creating this exponential curve over time. But the second engine is the one that actually dictates day-to-day behavior, and that is real cost averaging, or dollar cost, or rupee cost averaging, depending on your local currency.
Yeah, and to put real cost averaging into a real-world perspective for you, think about it like buying gasoline for your car, but with one rigid rule.
Okay, I like where this is going.
Imagine you commit to buying exactly 200 reals worth of gasoline on the first day of every month, and you just completely ignore the news, the global oil markets, or even the sign at the station.
That is a highly effective way to visualize the mechanics.
Right, because when the price of gas dips and gets incredibly cheap, your fixed 200 reals automatically buys you a larger number of gallons.
Exactly.
And then when the price skyrockets, that same 200 reals naturally buys you fewer gallons because you're buying more when it's cheap and less when it's expensive. Over the course of a year, you mathematically lower the average cost you paid per gallon. You don't have to watch the financial news or panic about, timing your purchase perfectly.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that strategy transforms simple consistency into a wealth-building tool that completely democratizes investing.
It really does.
The global data backing this up is just staggering. The text cites numbers from Allen Gray showing that systematic investment plans, or SIPs, grew by 13% year over year in just the first quarter of 2025.
Wait, a 13% jump in one quarter? That's a massive behavioral shift.
It's huge. It indicates that retail investors globally are abandoning the exhausting, anxiety-inducing attempt to time the market.
Right.
They're realizing that middle-income earners don't need a massive lump sum of upfront capital to build significant wealth. They just need the discipline to automate that 200 rial equivalent into the market every single month.
Which naturally leads to the next logistical hurdle.
Yeah.
Once you understand that real cost averaging actually works, you have to figure out the vehicle. Where does the money actually go?
To answer that, the source material introduces a concept we can call the trade-off triangle. The three points of this triangle are risk, returns, and liquidity. And the text provides a really detailed breakdown of how this plays out on the Saudi Arabian market, highlighting trustworthy institutions that manage structured portfolios, places like Sanibel Investments, Wood Ventures, and SAB Invest.
Let's translate those abstract categories into real-world scenarios.
Yeah.
Say you're an investor who wants relatively easy access to your cash. Like, you might need it in a few months.
In that scenario, you prioritize liquidity. So the text points you toward mutual fund systematic investment plans or digital investment platforms. You retain high liquidity, but your expected returns might sit in the 7 to 12% range for standard mutual funds, or vary wildly on digital platforms, which carry moderate to emerging risk.
Okay, but let's say you're deeply conservative. you absolutely cannot stomach the idea of your portfolio balance dropping, even temporarily.
Then you sacrifice high returns for extreme stability. The text highlights vehicles like the SAB Invest Saudi Rail Murbaha Fund.
Which is based on Islamic finance, right?
Yes, exactly. To break down that terminology, a Murbaha fund operates on principles of cost-plus financing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of earning interest, the fund buys an asset and sells it at a pre-agreed markup. It acts very much like the fixed income or money market fund. Your risk is incredibly low, but you know your returns will be pretty modest.
Okay, so what if we push the risk slider all the way in the other direction? Because the performance data cited in the text for the aggressive funds is where my scam radar immediately goes off.
Ah, you're looking at the equity funds.
Yes, I am. The text highlights the SAB Invest Saudi Freestyle Equity Fund, reporting a 34.2% year-to-date return as of August 2023.
Right.
And then it cites the SAB Invest Saudi Equity Fund, boosting 147.24% five-year return as of May 2025. Whenever I hear triple-digit returns over a five-year period, I immediately assume someone is cooking the books. I mean, how is 147% return legally or mathematically possible in a regulated market?
Your skepticism is incredibly healthy, and it's exactly how an investor should react to those kinds of numbers. But we have to look at the how and the why behind that data. A 147% return over 5 years isn't a guaranteed baked-in yield. It's a historical reflection of market momentum.
Oh, because of the economic shifts.
Exactly. Over that specific five-year window leading up to 2025, the Saudi economy underwent massive aggressive diversification under Vision 2030.
So the rising tide basically lifted all the boats in that specific market.
Furthermore, look at the term freestyle equity. Unlike a passive index fund that is forced to buy a little bit of everything in the market, including the sluggish companies, a freestyle fund gives a portfolio manager a wide mandate.
They can pick and choose?
Right. They aren't constrained by a strict benchmark. They can aggressively overweight their portfolio into highly volatile, high-growth sectors. When the manager guesses right during a historic economic boom, you see a 34% partial year return. When they guess wrong, you take heavy losses. That is the true nature of the risk-return trade-off.
Okay, that makes mathematical sense. You're riding the volatility of an expanding emerging market. But wait, let me push back on another vehicle listed here that seems to just defy the rules. Structured notes.
Okay.
The text categorizes these as offering 9 to 15% returns, but it labels them as low risk, high double-digit returns with low risk. That sounds like a literal financial cheat code. What is the catch here?
The catch is the third point of our triangle liquidity. Structured notes are essentially complex debt obligations issued by financial institutions. You're lending them your capital, and they use derivatives to guarantee your principal while offering a piece of the market upside.
Okay, but...
But to do that, your capital is locked away.
Oh, so it's like putting your money into a timed vault. You hand the bank the money, they lock the heavy steel door, and the timer is set for 3, 5, or sometimes 10 years. The bank pays you high rent for the privilege of holding the only key, but if you have a medical emergency and need that cash tomorrow, you just cannot open the vault.
That is a phenomenal analogy. You are trading access for security and yield. As an investor, you really have to look at your life and decide what fits. It's the fundamental law of finance. You can almost never have high returns, low risk, and instant access to your cash all at the same time. You'd pick two.
Pick two. And that reality check is so necessary when we're confronted with numbers like 147% returns. Because on paper, this all sounds flawless, right? You invest consistently, you let compound interest take over, and you get rich.
Right. But the source material is very clear that there are real-world pitfalls when we start chasing high yields.
Market volatility is the most obvious one, which we discussed with the equity funds. But another major trap the text identifies is the illusion of liquidity in real assets, specifically looking at REITs or real estate investment trusts.
Yes.
Let's define REITs for a moment. A REIT is essentially crowdfunding for real estate. You and thousands of other investors pool your monthly contributions to buy a commercial skyscraper, a hospital, or maybe a logistics hub, and you receive a proportional slice of the rental income.
Correct. And the text points to specific public REITs in Saudi Arabia, like Jadwa REIT, Mushiraka REIT, and Alinma Hospitality REIT, which historically deliver annual returns around 6 to 8%.
Which comfortably beats a standard savings account.
It does. But while public REITs are traded on exchanges, making them theoretically liquid, the underlying asset is concrete and steel.
Right. You can't just sell a fraction of a skyscraper overnight.
Exactly. If the commercial real estate market takes a sudden downturn, the bid-ask spreads on those REIT shares can widen significantly. Buyers dry up. You might technically be able to sell your shares, but you'd be forced to sell them at a steep discount just to find a buyer. Exiting those positions quickly without taking a loss can be incredibly difficult.
Okay, so we've talked about the risks of volatility and the risks of illiquidity, but I want to pivot to the risk that the text calls out as creeping in quietly, inflation. I want to argue a point here and tell me if the math holds up.
Let's hear it.
If inflation is constantly chipping away at our money, aren't those so-called safe, low-yield, conservative funds like that Mirabaja fund we discussed, aren't they actually the riskiest options for a listener trying to build long-term wealth?
What's fascinating here is how that completely inverts traditional financial advice. But you're absolutely correct.
Right. If you're trying to maintain your actual purchasing power, playing it safe basically guarantees you will lose money over a decade.
Inflation is the silent thief in the vault. Let's run the math on the safest scenario. Say you have your money in a perfectly stable account yielding a guaranteed 3%, but the cost of groceries, housing, and energy is rising at an inflation rate of 5%.
So you're in the red.
Yes. The numbers in your account are technically going up, but you are reliably losing 2% of your purchasing power every single year.
An invisible tax on your savings.
Precisely. And this is why taking on calculated market fluctuations, enduring the uncomfortable, stomach-churning dips in equity or real estate markets, is actually a mathematically necessary trade-off. You aren't taking on risk just to get rich quick. You're taking on calculated risk to ensure you outpace the thief. Avoiding all volatility is actually a guaranteed loss of purchasing power.
Wow, that completely reframes the concept of risk. Okay, so we've established the mechanics of real cost averaging, we've navigated the trade-off triangle, and we've redefined what risk actually means in an inflationary environment. But all of this is entirely theoretical until you actually execute it.
And the transition from theory to consistent action is where most wealth-building plans fall apart.
Because the true failure point for most investors isn't a lack of capital, is it? It's a lack of psychological endurance. Life gets stressful, an unexpected bill arrives, the market takes a 10% dip, and people just hit pause on their monthly investments. So how do we make this habit bulletproof?
Well, the excerpts from the Gamma blog provide a very sharp, actionable blueprint for exactly this.
Yeah.
They break down the psychology of execution into 5 steps.
Okay.
Step 1 is to automate your contributions. Set up a system where the money leaves your primary account the moment you get paid before you even have a chance to look at it. Step 2 is to start small and increase gradually so you don't shock your monthly budget and trigger a panic withdrawal.
That makes total sense. You basically bypass your own willpower. What is step 3?
Step 3 is critical for your mental health. Track your progress quarterly, not daily.
Oh, man. Checking your long-term retirement portfolio every single day is like planting a seed in your garden and then digging it up every single morning just to check if the roots are growing. You're literally going to kill the plant out of pure anxiety. Leave the dirt alone.
That is exactly what happens. You pull it up, you disturb the compounding process, and you panic sell at the exact wrong time.
Yeah.
Moving to step 4, they suggest behavioral stacking. You tie your investment review to a habit you already have established. For instance, only look at your portfolio on the first Sunday of the month when you pay your utility bills.
And step 5.
Set milestones, not just financial goals. Instead of obsessing over an arbitrary number like hitting 1 million riles, you celebrate behavioral milestones. You celebrate hitting 12 months of uninterrupted automated contributions. It rewards the habit itself, which keeps motivation high regardless of what the market is doing that particular month.
The overarching theme of all 5 steps really seems to be eliminating friction. And the text highlights a specific platform, Usul Gamma, as an example of how the financial industry is actually evolving to facilitate this.
Yes, Usul Gamma is a fascinating case study because it appears to be engineered entirely around these behavioral principles. For investors who want consistency without the complexity of managing a freestyle equity portfolio, the platform focuses on real estate-linked opportunities designed for passive income and capital growth.
How does it actually bypass the psychological hurdles, though?
By hard-coding the start small and automate steps directly into the platform's infrastructure. They feature low entry requirements, meaning you don't need that massive lump sum, and they handle the automated monthly routing of funds, all while operating under strict adherence to Saudi financial regulations. It just removes the user from the daily mechanics of the trade.
So by automating the process on a reliable platform, you're essentially solving for decision fatigue. You don't have to wake up every month and make an active emotional choice to part with your money. The system just executes the logic you set up when you were thinking clearly. You take your own anxious brain out of the equation entirely.
This raises an important question, though, because decision fatigue is the absolute enemy of wealth generation. The less you have to think about your long-term investments on a daily basis, the more successful they tend to be.
Let's take a breath and look at the ground we've covered today, because we have dismantled a lot of traditional financial advice.
We really have journeyed through quite a bit of complex architecture.
We started by decoding the mechanics of rail cost averaging, using the gasoline analogy to prove that blind consistency mathematically beats the anxiety of trying to time the market. We navigated the trade-off triangle, weighing the aggressive, volatile potential of freestyle equities against the steady, timed vault security of structured notes.
Yep.
We confronted the silent thief of inflation, realizing that playing it entirely safe in a savings account is actually the greatest risk to your purchasing power. And finally, we laid out the psychological blueprint for automating your success and bypassing your own decision fatigue.
It is a highly robust roadmap for multiplying income. But as I synthesize all these sources, the investment texts, the behavioral blogs, the platform data, they focus intensely on the mechanics of accumulating capital. They teach us how to build the machine.
Right.
But they leave us hovering right on the edge of a much deeper, almost philosophical question regarding what the machine is actually for.
Oh, I like where this is going. What is the question we're missing?
Well, think about the ultimate end game of total financial automation. If you apply all these steps and you successfully automate your wealth building to the absolute limit, to the point where your money is aggressively multiplying itself in the background and requires absolutely zero daily attention from you, how does that fundamentally change your relationship with your own labor?
Wow.
Are you building this complex financial architecture simply to watch a number get larger on a screen? Or are you utilizing these high return monthly strategies to eventually buy back your own time?
Are you building a bigger bank account or are you buying your own freedom? That is the exact thought we want to leave you with today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the mechanics of wealth. Keep exploring the systems around you, stay curious, and keep unpacking the world. We'll see you next time.